Amen. Now, as our gospel passion opened, as our gospel passage opens, we can see that Jesus is once again hanging out with sinners. He is hanging out with sinners, and he is eating with them. Of course, he is doing so. They throw much better parties. We all know this. They have much better music. I mean, come on, let's be honest. Anyway, have you listened to, just think back in the day. Have you listened to Christian music in like the 70s and 80s, really? Come on. Anyway, one word, people. Carmen, come on. All right, anyway. No, seriously. He's hanging out with sinners. He's with the unright. He's with tax collectors. He's with IRS agents. He's with government employees. He's with people on the government payroll. And the righteous people, they're saying, he's eating with these people. He's socializing with them. He receives sinners and he eats with them. And so Jesus tells this parable. Which one of you, having a sheep, if he loses one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? Which one of you, being a shepherd, having 99 sheep, having 100 sheep, realizing that one of them is lost, does not leave the 99 behind and go after the one that is lost? Come on. Come on. That doesn't make sense. Okay, some of you are feeling a bit sheepish. Seriously, this doesn't make sense. All sorts of things are trying to get your sheep. You've got wolves, you've got poachers, you've got other people that are trying to get your sheep. You've lost one. Well, shucks. That's really unfortunate. I'm going to stomp my feet, pound my fist, say some unpleasant words, review my policies, look at my manual, review some things, try and figure out what I've done to lose the sheep in the first place, kick a dog or two, and then make sure it doesn't happen again. But am I really going to leave 99 sheep unprotected to go find one? Does this make sense? Let's put it in a different context. I run an electronics store. I have a whole bunch of really fancy, very expensive televisions. And one person grabs a very expensive television and runs out the door with it. And I think, that man's just run off with my television. He's carrying a television. He can't run very fast. Even I ought to be able to catch him. Okay, it's not one of my better moments of rationalization, but never mind that. I'm going to go after him. So I run out the door and leave all my other merchandise unprotected. The other 15 people in the store look behind and see me run out the door and go, really? Really? And the one guy puts his hand up over the video camera, and everybody else takes everything else I own. Okay? So, which one of you, having 100 sheep, losing one, does not leave all the other sheep behind and go after until he finds the one sheep that's left behind, that's lost? Me, I don't do that. That doesn't make sense. In fact, It only sort of makes sense in this one kind of context. There's only one kind of person that I think this makes sense to. Okay? And that is the person who is wildly and madly in love. Because for those people, common sense, higher reasoning, yeah, kind of gets left out the back door, you know? Hop in the Wayback Machine, take a journey with me back to when you first fell madly in love, okay? Not your first crush, but your first head over heels, leave all good sense at the door, check please, I'm done, it's over. This is the person who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with, all of my days, whether that be true or false. This is it. I will be positively ill if this person doesn't look at me and smile every moment of the day. That moment. Remember back then? Remember when your friends were like, gosh, man, I don't know if this is really such a good idea. And you looked at the friend that you'd known since you were in diapers and were like, why are you being this way? I don't ever want to talk to you again. And your friends are like, really? This makes sense to you? And your parents, well, we don't even want to talk about parents because we know that at a certain point in time, parents cease making sense altogether. And so there's no point in talking about what parents have tried to say and what we have done with them, okay? Just leave them aside. But your parents tried, and you were like, you just don't understand. Never mind. Okay? But your friends, you do the most ridiculous things. Because you're just madly in love. I remember this one thing, and I can say this because my wife is not in the room and she's always too busy to go listen to the recording, so I should be safe with this. I watch, she's going to walk in any time now and I'm just going to be hosed. This one time in high school, I got my girlfriend this Valentine's Day gift, and we went to different high schools. So I wanted her to get it on Valentine's Day, so it was like $15 worth of chocolate candies. It was nothing extravagant or anything like that. But I wanted to have it when she got it on Valentine's Day. So I got up at just a ridiculously early hour of the morning. And I drove to her house. And she was the first one to leave her house to go to school. So I left it on her front porch. But then I began to think, this is a surprise. So what if it's such a surprise that she doesn't see it? And she trips on her Valentine's Day chocolate. And she falls off her front porch and like breaks her ankle. How horrible would that be? So I made like this banner out of printer paper and I taped it from one end of the thing to the other. It was like, look down. What a moron. This was the most ridiculous thing I think I ever did. Never mind the fact that I had to get up so early to do this, to get it there before she ever could have possibly left early, that I had to drive over to a friend's house and I crashed on his couch for like 45 minutes before I had to get up and take him to school. So, this was the ridiculousness. Anyway, we're like this when we think we're in love. We just do ridiculous things. But every now and then, and these instances are very, very few and far between, mind you. But every now and then, when we fall in love that first time, we're not wrong. One of my sisters-in-law actually married her first love. Her husband is the first guy that she ever dated. The only guy she ever dated. They've been together for years, 4 children, happily married. First, only. By the grace of God, when their final days come, you're the first, only, and ever. What a blessing that'll be. You see, that's how God looks at us. See, we don't really get that. Because we don't ever put all these kind of things together. We don't think of God loving us in the same way that we think about loving our spouse. And honestly, we don't really think about loving our spouse probably in the same way that we think about what we thought about loving that boyfriend or girlfriend back all those years ago. And we certainly don't think about loving our spouse the same way that we love our children. And we don't think about loving our children the same way that we love our parents. And we don't think about loving our parents and our children and our spouse the same way that we think about loving God. But for God, God is love. All of it. Every good thing that is love is all in one and encompassing and all rolled together. That silliness, that ridiculousness, without any of the selfishness, that's all God. That, yeah, I'll get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go put chocolates on your door. Yeah, I'll disregard what my friends say. I'll disregard what everyone else says. I'll do that because I'm in love. Yes. Yes, I will leave the 99 behind to go after you. Because I'll go after the 98th one later. And I will find him too. And I will never let any of them go. John chapter 10, verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. The wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because a hireling is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and I am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father. I lay my life down for the sheep. He knows his sheep know him, and he lays down his life for them. This is what he knows. This is who he lays his life down for. This love that he would do, that he does, is beyond what we do, is beyond what we understand, but beyond what we can fathom. Because beyond what we talk about, we know that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. We can look at it in terms of this. Which of you, having lost children who hated you and despised you and cursed you and turned their back on you and rejected you, left the one son who was just like you and completely of your own nature and essence, and left him to be brutally murdered by people who despised him to go after the children who hated you? Isn't that what St. Paul says in Romans? While we were yet sinners, God sent his Son to die for us. Isn't that what we've been talking about from this passage in Luke? leaving the one, leaving the 99 to go after the one, imperils the 99, sending his son to die for us so he might redeem us. I tell the youth group all the time, this is how much God loves you. He sent his son to die for you. I tell the youth group, look, I'm really fond of you, but if it comes down to you and any of my children, I'm really sorry. And all of you are very thankful I'm not God. So what? So St. Paul and 1 Timothy talks about himself. He says, look, I was the worst among sinners, and God sent his son to die for me. He poured grace upon me. He did this out of his love. Even though I was horrible, even though I was a blasphemer, even though I murdered his people, he sent his son after me. What do we do with this? What do we do with the Israelites who Moses is up on the mountain for 6 weeks? He's up on the mountain of God. It's not like they didn't know where he went. He says, brothers, children of Israel, I'm going up on the mountain where God is. This place right up here with all the thunder and all the lightning and the fire and the smoke and the ash and the voice of God up on this mountain. Don't go on this mountain. Don't let the cattle or the sheep or the goats go on this mountain. And you don't go on this mountain because if you go on the mountain, you're going to die. Don't go there because this is where God is. Don't go there. Remember, this is the God who brought us out of Egypt, 9 plagues, death of the firstborn, you know, all that kind of stuff, parting the Red Sea, pillar of fire, death, destruction. That God, he's there. Don't go on the mountain. I'm going up there. Not sure when I'll be back. Be cool. Stay. 6 weeks later, Aaron, we don't know where Moses is. Build us a God so we can worship him. Aaron, being the clever man that he is, okay, give me all your earrings, all your necklaces, all your bracelets. I'll make a golden calf. Okay, Israel, this is our God. He led us out of Egypt. Not sure how that works. But anyway, so they bow down and worship. This is our God. Thanks for leading us out of Egypt, Israel. Yay! Anyway, and God is like, Moses, stay here. I've got some killing to do. And Moses says, now God, do you really want all of the other nations to say, look, do you want them to say that you led them out of bondage in Egypt just to kill them in the mountains? Is that how you want to be known throughout all ages? Don't you remember that you promised Abraham that you would build him a great nation out of his descendants? Now, I think that he was trying to prove a point with Moses here, that he was trying to get Moses to intercede. Because if he really had wanted to go down and smite all of them, then he could have said, you know what, Moses, you're a child of Abraham, I can start over. Okay? But anyway, so Abraham intercedes for them. God says, okay, go down, pardon the pun, raise some Cain, cause some trouble, we'll start over here. What about this?